Thursday morning, Mark Farrell, the show's insight on the Progressive Radio Network. How you feeling? January's almost behind us. Isn't that a good feeling? I'm not a fan of January. It's kind of bleak, blasé, cold as hell. Big Apple is freezing. 10 degrees today? We're supposed to get, no matter where you're listening, probably heard that we were going to get inundated with 2-3 feet of snow. Didn't happen. Fine with that. So are my colleagues, because who wants to walk around in 24 or 36 inches of snow? Massachusetts wasn't so lucky. Long Island wasn't so lucky. But we're looking forward to spring. Not that it's in the air, but you know, it's pretty cool in Boston, though. A bartender thinks that, and many people agree with him, that the finish line for the Boston Marathon is sacred ground. So after he finished his shift the other day, Chris Bandini went out there and shoveled the finish line. He had a borrow shovel, and in his mind, he thought and thinks that this should never, ever be covered because it's sacred ground. He's run the marathon. He's a lifelong Bostonian, and really, really a cool thing to do. And this happened, actually. It was discovered because there was a guy who actually was staying in a hotel because he lost power due to the 2 feet of snow they received in Boston. Took a break from his desk, looking out the window, see some guy out there shoveling. Not a Department of Public Works guy, no snowplow, a guy with a shovel that he borrowed, no less. And he took a picture of this, and that's how it got internet worldwide overnight success and fame because of his love for what it stands for, the Boston Marathon. The finish line, of course, what took place there a couple years ago. Good for him, man. Very, very cool. It's nice to see that people take something so, serious or of significance and paramount concern that they're willing to, like, just go out of their way and do something like that because, you know, I mean, first of all, there's a lot of snow on the ground. Secondly, yeah, I mean, yes, it would have been cleared eventually, very probably quickly by the plows, but it's even more significant, symbolic, rather, that he went there and shoveled it by hand. Well, with a shovel, of course, but meaning that, you know, this is sacred. I can't have this covered. The world needs to see this. People need to go to work tomorrow or the day after and see that the emblem for the New York City, sorry, the Boston Marathon is not under snow. Very, very cool. So, you know, of course, the big week here, the 2 weeks in between the championship game and then, of course, the Super Bowl. A couple days away here, Thursday and Sunday at 6:30. Super Bowl 49 kicks off with Seattle Seahawks against the I hate to say them. New England Patriots. Actually, I really don't care for either one of these teams. I actually just not really a fan of New England Patriots because of a lot of obvious reasons in the past. The coach, Tom Brady, kind of over him, all that jazz. But it made me think about, you know, everyone has like a Super Bowl in their life. Whether it's a sport, something you want to accomplish, personal reasons, whether it's something at work, climbing up the corporate ladder, whatever the case may be, we all have something that kind of empowers us. And it's, you know, I've done a few things that I consider my Super Bowl. I can never play football with my vision. I couldn't sustain a blow to the head. Didn't want to have my retina detached. Knew, actually, my brother had his retina detached. We have a similar eye disorder and his detached. So they were saying, no, absolutely no, Mark, you cannot play football. So for me, I have a few Super Bowl parallels, and I'd love to hear yours. One was running a marathon. And for me, there was no other greater athletic feat in my life. And I can't, well, there's one other one I'll get to, that brought on so much reward and gratification. Running 26.2 miles in New York through the five boroughs just was incredible. I did it in 95 and 96, seems like 5,000 lifetimes ago. And I'm actually going to do it again next year in 2016 for my 50th. 50th? I'm turning 50. Holy shit. Yeah, for my 50th. Which I have no problem knowing that I'll do well, probably even do maybe even better because I'm a different athlete than I was mentally. And marathon is more of a mental sport. Of course, there's a lot of endurance involved, but there's a lot of mental anguish and pain and game playing. So that's one of my Super Bowls of sorts, doing a triathlon. My first one back in 88, and many since then. They're very, very rewarding. It doesn't have the same feeling for me, though, as the marathon, because I think the marathon, New York City Marathon, takes on a whole different significance because of the platform. When I say the platform, the five boroughs, the, oh my God, millions of people chanting for you. And it feels like they're chanting for you, especially when you wear a shirt that says your name on it. So when they're like, Mark, come on, you can do it. Yeah, Mark. Hey, Mark, you're tall for marathon or whatever it takes, you know. It's great when these people just come together, one big family for a typical day, which is great. A lot of people do extreme races. There are many, many different types of variations, mud runs, obstacle courses, and those are Super Bowls for people. I love that. Some people like to travel. I mean, they've dreamt for a lifetime to maybe go to China, Australia, wherever the case may be, Egypt, see the pyramids, Philippines, wherever it may be. This was a Super Bowl moment in my life, not so much a Super Bowl class lifelong lasting experience, but working at Club Med. Yeah, I worked at Club Med for about 4 or 5 months. I actually got fired, and this is a great segment for another show, but I was a bartender in Club Med. It's fairly X-rated, this story. But it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. But it was not a Super Bowl moment in my mind. Snorkeling at the Great Barrier Reef, I would like to do that. That would be cool. And I'm sure a lot of you would like to do that and consider that a Super Bowl moment. Helping others reach their goals, is that something that would make you feel like a Super Bowl winner? Playing on local softball, soccer teams, a lot of people get a lot of gratification and reward from that. And why not? It's a great thing to do because maybe you weren't that skilled or gifted and didn't have the confidence when you were younger or in college because the playing talent was so much better than you, or you felt that it was, that you didn't participate. Maybe you get your Super Bowl moments from coaching kids, soccer, baseball, maybe your own, driving across country, or maybe walking across country. Our next guest is going to be talking about his experience, a man among many other incredible feats that he's experienced in his life. Learning a different language, could that be a Super Bowl moment for you? Yeah, why not? Maybe two different languages, maybe three. Losing, especially this time of year, losing a significant amount of weight can be a huge thing that makes you feel like you're a Super Bowl champion. Now, I use the word Super Bowl, of course, because it's just the buzzword this week, or especially when you watch TV or radio. It's called the big game because it's trademarked. It's so funny, right? I can't get used to saying that. But they can send the cease and desist right here to PRN. Attention, Gary Null, if I get in trouble for saying Super Bowl. Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl. You kidding? You keeping count at home? The big game just doesn't sound right. I mean, they're plugging the Super Bowl the hell out of it, right? So why wouldn't you want to talk about that? Always appreciate your calls and comments. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And, of course, listening every Thursday right here on PRN.FM. You got a lot of choices out there, guys. A lot of choices. Terrestrial radio, satellite radio, internet radio, and I'm glad you park it right here. Really, really appreciate this. And one of the reasons is that we're able to give you some programming that you just can't really find at other places. And some great hosts, my colleagues, and I appreciate that. And we're able to attract some great guests. For example, my first guest is certainly known in the football realm and the concentric circles that far exceed the football realm. And we're going to find out why. A lot of you people know a great deal about my guests. And some of his football stats are very much mind-blowing. 96 quarterback sacks. Touchdown record for a defensive lineman. Now, you know, that's a big goal. That's a huge goal. And he's got a big rock on one of his fingers because he earned it in 1986 when he won the Super Bowl with the Giants. He's an NFL legend and so much more. I'm so glad and happy to welcome George D. Martin to my show. George, how are you, my friend?
Good. Good morning, Mark. How you doing today?
I'm really kind of disenchanted with you, George, because the first time you were on my show, you know, not only do I love you because you were a big blue giant and a hero to many, many then and now, but you were a New Jersey guy, and now you're bi-coastal, you're out on the West Coast? What is this about?
Out on the West Coast, well, I can tell you this, Mark. In all honesty, the old saying goes, happy wife, happy life.
Oh.
My wife and I, we've been married for 40 years, and the vast majority of that was spent out there on the East Coast. And after the winters that we've had perpetually since we've been there, she says to me one day, honey, I've spent my last winter in New Jersey. So, you know, being the good steward that I am and a good husband, I dutifully moved out to a place called Elk Grove, California, which is just south of Sacramento.
Good for you, my friend. As a matter of fact, I'm sure she endured a lot with your 14 seasons and all the games and all the time she had to forfeit for you. So I guess you said, yep, honey, it's your turn.
Turnabout is fair play, buddy.
Exactly, exactly. So 14 years in the NFL with one team back then wasn't completely an aberration, but certainly nowadays, you know, it's an anomaly to spend 14 years or actually even 5 or 7 years with one team, correct?
Yeah, I think that there are two dynamics here. Number one, it certainly wasn't by choice, although if I had my druthers, I would have wanted to stay as it played out with the New York Football Giants. But secondly, because of free agency, we didn't have the mobility that modern players have today. I mean, once you signed with a particular club, it was kind of like in perpetuity. You had to stay there forever. But now you see the mobility and the freedom, and, you know, I like the evolution of the game and that dynamic.
So, George, after all these years, you're still a man in great physical condition. I don't think anyone I know who would even consider taking you on because you're a machine. So when you're the week before the Super Bowl, do you still get a spring in your step and do you still get elated like a little kid, even no matter who's playing, just because it brings back and conjures up so many great memories?
You know, Mark, you made a lot of very accurate analogies and comparisons to the Super Bowl earlier in your monologue, and I got to tell you that, you know, there are a lot of Super Bowl-esque like experiences, but you know, there's nothing like the Super Bowl itself. And you know, once you've gone to the Super Bowl, and I always say this to any players or any coaches, there are two definitive dynamics of the Super Bowl. One is the aspiration to get there, to be one of the elite, to go to the Super Bowl. But secondly, and the most importantly, is the winning of the Super Bowl.
Every year,
you know, 50% of the people that get there are going to be disappointed.
So, absolutely.
You know, once you won the Super Bowl, you know, everything kind of pales by comparison. And I do love the competition. I love the fact that, and particularly this year, I think it's going to be a great contest. I'm going to be down there, enjoying the festivities. And it's just a dynamic in society that is so, just about everybody gets involved during Super Bowl week.
It just seems certainly a person of your caliber, any player, it just seems like a rite of passage. That particular Sunday, once a year, it's just like reliving it.
It really is, and you have such elation, you have such empathy for those individuals who go and win it, and you almost celebrate spontaneously with them. You know, whether you're a casual fan or whether you're a devoted fan, you can't help but to join in that emotional triumph of seeing those guys host that Vince Lombardi Trophy. And I got to tell you, as an athlete, I don't care irrespective of sports, there is nothing like hoisting a championship trophy. That is a standalone by itself.
Can't imagine, my friend. And continue that thought. Try to paint a picture of what it's like to run into an end zone 7 times for yourself. 7 touchdowns for a person of your position is, you know, it's a great number. What kind of elation and feeling did you have? And I'm sure it feels like it just happened 5 minutes ago, if you can describe it. Right?
Because it's so unexpected. First of all, you know, there are running backs that don't have 7 touchdowns.
Yeah, no kidding.
And, you know, for a defensive lineman, it's like, you know, whether you recover a fumble, which is sort of like, you know, that's something that really is something to cheer about, and your teammates get around you. Man, you recovered a fumble. That's great. To have an interception is like, man, you just landed on the moon. But when you have an interception and you run it in for a touchdown, That's the rarefied air. And, you know, you can see the fact that J.J. Watt, who is a phenom in and of itself, mm-hmm. I mean, he's having a phenomenal year, Pro Bowl selection, and he got into the end zone several times. For me to have, you know, established that record and subsequently have it broken by Jason Taylor, you know you've made a contribution into an industry when you are a record setter. And that is a compliment and a tribute to you and your skill set and your dedication to your craft.
Now, there are so many impressive stats to George Martin, your performance. One more is only that you missed 6 games in 14 years. Now, let's rewind a little bit and find out a little bit more about the young George Martin, rural South Carolina. When did football become something more than just a game with your friends and became a passion?
You know, that's a great question, Mark, because unlike, I think, a lot of my colleagues and teammates who started very early on in their development to play in sports, unfortunately, I didn't have that opportunity growing up in the rural South. And consequently, I wasn't exposed to organized football until I was in the ninth grade, and it was something that I got caught, you know, I really caught on very quickly. But you know, for those people who think that you have to immerse your child or yourself in sports from birth, I kind of disagree with that. I think that there should be a period where you understand the nuances and you let your body develop, because if you don't, I think you open up your children to a lot of injuries. But once I did become involved in organized sports, boy, it really broadened me as an individual. I'm telling you, it really allows you to develop social skills, which will come in very handy later on in life. Hmm. It really immerses you in the diversity amongst individuals, and it's just a great way to become a well-rounded individual in society.
When did you feel this is going to be your professional future? When you were in college?
No, as a matter of fact, Mark, you want to hear something funny. I was a three-sport player in high school. I played basketball, football, and tennis. I was an All-American basketball player, and my first love, ironically, was basketball. So I wanted to play basketball so badly that when I was recruited to the University of Oregon, I actually played both sports, football and basketball, my first 2 years.
Impressive.
Until the reality set in that at 6'4", although you would be a very imposing football player, you'd be a very mediocre basketball player at 6'4". So I just decided to concentrate on football merely as a means of completing my scholarship. And, you know, I had no aspirations or desires, and I didn't think that I had the ability to go into the pro ranks until one of my predecessors from the University of Oregon by the name of Tom Graham told me that who preceded me into the pro football arena told me that he would be very disappointed if I didn't make it as a professional football player. And that spurred me and gave me the confidence to go on and be competitive and subsequently become a professional athlete.
Now, do you think words like that can really fuel somebody and catapult you? And it's great to have somebody in your life. Everybody should have somebody in your life like that supports and or can, again, catapult you forward, which is nice. But do you think it was a combination and or what's the ratio, do you think, between your sheer athleticism and just perseverance and hard work?
I think there's a direct correlation. That's a great question. I think there is a direct correlation between having that sheer ability and having that faith, belief, and or support internally and externally from other sources. I think it's vital. I've seen so many guys who have had the absolute definitive ability to be superstars in the National Football League, but you've heard the term, they didn't have their head screwed on right, they didn't have the proper support mechanism, mm-hmm. they just didn't believe in themselves, and it falls by the wayside, Mark. I've seen that time and time again. I'll give you another example in the opposite. A guy by the name of Brad Benson, which is, you know, again, a household name in New Jersey and a great sure. former teammate of mine. Brad Benson had very mediocre skills when he came to the New York Football Giants. But I never saw a guy who worked on his craft so diligently, so consistently. He literally propelled himself from the ranks of mediocrity into, I think, Pro Bowl status, because he just had that desire, that belief, and Bill Parcells encouraged it and nurtured it and made him into what he eventually became as a professional athlete.
And he certainly does the same thing selling cars, because he sells a boatload of them, and he reminds you of this every day on the radio.
Absolutely. He's quite a guy. He is indeed.
But you know what? We're digressing here, but you know what's kind of cool about him? He always brings some interesting little tidbit of football into his commercials, which I always like.
I love his commercials. I think it's very witty, very clever, and like you say, he sells a boatload of cars.
So going back to what you touched on, I mean, today's game, the immaturity level, I think we'll just kind of put it under the umbrella of immaturity level, whether you don't have your head screwed on straight or temperament, and we're going to get to this a few minutes later, you know, off-the-field performances. I mean, this is just a whole another game on many levels. And it must, a person of your dignity, moral content, it must really frustrate you.
It does, but I'm able to put it into context.
Sure.
I realize and I acknowledge proudly that I'm, by every assessment, an old-school ball player. Mm. I'm a guy who feels that a celebration should take place after the game and not during the game. I can't tell you how many games I've seen where a team is getting blowed out, and then an athlete will come in and have a great play. He'll have a quarterback sack or a good tackle or something, jumps up off the ground, and he's celebrating, and they're losing. Like they're getting their teeth handed to him. And that just doesn't make any sense to me. It really doesn't. I think you should also encourage your teammates. You should be a part of the solution and not part of the problem. And but I say it's a different environment today. I understand that. I recognize it. And I'm supportive of it because, you know, I was brought up in the era where you were supposed to be seen and not heard. And that was a bit, disconcerting at times. But now these guys have kind of gone overboard a little bit with the premature celebrations.
Do you think the size and physical and sheer power of these machines, these Adonises, are just completely almost over the top nowadays?
No, not really. I think that we're seeing the evolution of the game, and I saw it when I was a player. If you were to overlay my era with the preceding era, the eras in the past, you would say, wow, what a dynamic transformation between old school of the past and the George Martin era.
Good point.
Well, you can do that same thing now. You can overlay today's with my era, and you'll say, man, what a quantum leap athletics has made. When you look at exercise physiology, you look at the fact that it's a year-round commitment to the sport. These guys are getting bigger, faster, stronger, and more intelligent. It's just a continual evolution toward perfection, and I think it'll continue to grow and become better even in the future, even with the cadre of rule changes that are currently taking place as well, Mark.
George Martin is my guest. The show's insight on PRN.FM. George is, of course, the all-time former New York Giant defensive end, number 75. And I'm sure you made a lot of sacrifices in your personal and professional career. A lot of topics on this show are covered under the adversity umbrella. Myself, like you, are a speaker when I'm not on the air here and speak to audiences nationally about overcoming adversity, and that falls into a lot of different areas. So talk about some adversity, George, because I'm sure you're a human being like everyone else, and even more as a celebrity and a professional athlete, had your fair share of adversity. Can you share some of those stories, please?
Absolutely. First of all, I want to mention some of the sacrifices, because when you look at, Mark, that the average career span of a football player professionally is under 4 years. It's about 3.5 years or something of that nature. To have played 14 years as I did in that environment means an inordinate amount of sacrifice from your family. And, I can't tell you how many ball games I've missed, how many dinners I missed, how many, teacher conferences I missed. That really hurt me, and I tried to make up for that effort. But those are days that you lose and you just never get back. So consequently, when I eventually retired, I made sure that I made every ball game. I have a daughter and three sons. I wanted to make sure that I was there, and Dad was their biggest supporter, as they had been mine when I was playing.
And I imagine a grandfather extraordinaire.
Oh, yeah, well, now that's the best is yet to come, because now I've got six grandkids.
Good.
And I take great delight in spoiling every one of them, Mark.
Good for you.
So, it kind of like makes up for some of the time that you lost, because of your profession, your occupation. But there's nothing like having a great family structure. And by the way, I'm so fortunate to have that, because, as I say, I married that high school sweetheart more than 40 years ago, and, she's still the love of my life.
Now, we talked about a lot of rules being assessed. You touched on that quickly. And there's so many different topics here today that we could just do a whole interview on one topic overall, but we're going to touch on some of these in terms of some of these rules. Just in your mind, certainly as a man who played pro ball for so many years, what's one or two rules that you think really need to be readdressed? Of course, refs, I'm sure, are going to be holding on to the footballs before the game starts now. But besides those.
Well, first of all, Mark, I'd like to say and commend the National Football League for protecting the quarterback because, as you say, you've got some fire-breathing dragons that are, that are really just accosting these quarterbacks. And to hit a quarterback who is unprotected or has his back to you, I think that that is something that is a great positive rule. So you don't want to have a quarterback mangled because he is not aware of the dangers that's coming behind him. So protecting the quarterback, not hitting him below the waist, making sure that the helmet is taken out of the game, I think those are rule changes that I absolutely applaud. First of all, you have to say that football in and of itself is an inherently dangerous sport, and you're never going to make it foolproof or totally safe.
Sure.
But the rules that go and protect the safety, the overall safety of the players, I applaud, and I tell you why. Because as a player representative for 13 of my 14 years and for being the president of the National Football League Players Association, also the president of the NFL Alumni Association, I have seen so many individuals, both who are my seniors and my juniors, who have suffered the travails of being a professional athlete, brain injuries, advanced arthritis, things like that, which have really diminished, as you say, these Adonis into walking mummies in some cases. And in many cases, they've even taken their own lives. So I want to see this sport that we all love and we appreciate to become safer, not only for the fans, but particularly for the players themselves.
Well, it's great because the conversation's begun within the last year, year and a half about that. And I understand it's a legal matter for the NFL to come out and say, you're right, we understand people are getting banged up, et cetera, et cetera. So I think slowly but surely, not fast enough, of course, for the players who are suffering and or players soon to be retiring with insurance, et cetera. But obviously there's a lot of trauma involved. Who knows? People say, well, maybe they should go back to the leather helmets or play like rugby players without helmets, and it'll slow the game down. But that's never going to happen. Be realistic.
No, not realistic at all.
No, not at all. Now, what do you think? And this is kind of a shame because everything has been so much the bottom line and everything across the board. As a matter of fact, I say to people, like, the world changed, the economy changed back in 08, 07, 08. And I said, everyone, all the other industries, including sports, became like radio. Radio's always been cutthroat. You never know how secure your job is. But certainly as an NFL player, they must be very realistic, the players, at how dispensable they are. And that can't be a good feeling. Right?
There's an old adage I will share with you, Mark, that the most expendable thing in professional football are not professional footballs themselves, but are professional football players.
Yeah.
That adage happens to be absolutely true. And by the way, in an era where there is no such thing as guaranteed contracts, unless you're a part of the upper echelon of the sports, which is few and far between, I mean, these guys have to earn and maintain their lifestyle each and every day. And by the way, they have a host of critics who are standing over their shoulders and giving immediate assessment from the fans to coaches to owners each and every contest. So you're only as good as your last game, as they say. And people don't realize that fully a quarter to a third of the National Football League turns over every year. For every young rookie who is drafted and comes into the league, you've got some veteran player who's making his exit. So that's a reality that a lot of athletes are not apprised of. So it is a very, very, as you say, cutthroat industry.
That's a huge number. I didn't realize the turnover is so vast.
Oh, it's huge.
Wow.
You've always got someone out to take your job.
Sure. Now, how concrete did you feel in securing your position after, obviously it was a different world back then.
Mm-hmm.
Not as cutthroat, but you were always fighting for your position. Of course, you're so passionate and driven, and that's how you were on the field and off the field, and certainly your other professional careers. But how secure did you feel?
That's an oxymoron. It really is, Mark. It doesn't exist. There's no such thing as security.
Okay.
And even though, and particularly back in the old days, even though you were a starter, even though you had these statistical accomplishments, there was always, and I got to tell you, during that time, I can give you names like Troy Archer, Gary Jeter. These are guys who were number one draft choice defensive ends that were brought in there to replace none other than George Martin. So it is an extremely competitive environment. And that's the one thing that you want to realize, that every day you've got to earn your keep. And if you can do that, then I guess you have some sense of staying power. But any day you could become a former professional athlete. If an owner walked in and he didn't like something you did on or off the field, if a coach, you for some reason you got on his bad side, I've seen guys be banished forever. It's the environment where you have to realize it's a big boys game. It's professional football. It's not amateur football. And that comes with the territory.
Wow. It's one thing to see the writing on the wall, but to see a potential replacement right next to you, that's pretty intimidating. That'll get you up earlier and stay late at practice.
Absolutely. As I say, when they knock on the door and the coach tells you to bring your playbook, it's
You're done. Oh, my God. You're thinking about the car payments. Why did I buy that second house? Jesus Christ. Yeah. So let's get to the Super Bowl. Of course, you know, back then, there's nothing like it. And, of course, the nerves must be incredibly heightened. Explain that day when you're suiting up and what takes place in your mind and physically also as well.
Boy, I can't even think of a suitable analogy for that, Mark. Number one, I did watch this year's Media Day, and, you know, back even when we played in 1986, Media Day was something spectacular. We had a fairly sizable cadre of media out there, but today, oh, my gosh. I mean, you could fill a stadium with the amount of media that's there. And when I looked at Brady's press conference, when I looked at Belichick's press conference surrounding all of the Deflategate, mm-hmm. I mean, it was just a horde of individuals out there, the cameras, the microphones. That in and of itself creates a very unwelcome distraction as you're about to embark on the biggest game of the year, and in some cases the biggest game of some of these guys' professional life. You don't want those kind of distractions looming over you as you go into this game. I can only compare it to, Mark, when my first child was born. You know, you're pacing back and forth. You don't know what the procedure's like. You don't know whether it's a boy or girl. You don't know if your wife's going to be okay. You don't know if the doctor's going to be doing. I mean, you are just a nervous wreck. That's the same feeling I had in the Super Bowl, because realize it took me 12 years to get there, and some guys never get there at all. To have waited 12 years and then there's no guarantee of the outcome, my God, some people I'm surprised don't have a heart attack. It's just so painful to go through all of that, and your nerves are at an absolute apex, at the zenith, and you go out there and you don't want to make a mistake, and at the same time you want to have your best performance.
Sure.
And generally in times like that, that's when you make your biggest mistake.
Yeah, you're hypersensitive.
Right, exactly.
How long does it take you to kind of lose those nerves and really just get your head on, after 5 minutes or so?
No. It took us quite a long. If you look at our game back in '87 in the Super Bowl, it took us fully a quarter. Some guys a little bit longer because we were so hyped up. We had a great defense, but my God, we were just so
You were jacked.
We were really jacked. But we settled into ourselves in the second half, and Phil Simms and Joe Morris, they had such a magnificent performance on offense. Defense turned around and became our dominating selves in the second half, and it became a cakewalk, a pretty easy cakewalk there in the second half.
You know, I have to go back, because if anything, if I would have just guessed about any analogy you would have given about playing in the Super Bowl, childbirth would not have been the furthest thing from my mind. And I don't know if your wife of 40 years heard that or has ever heard that, but maybe because you're not telling the whole story, maybe she was yelling like a football player, "Get the F out of my way! How could you have done this to me?"
Exactly.
We all have been there, my friend. What about playing for the Giants? Did you feel that your career was complete? I mean, of course you got the big brass ring that everyone reached for. Was there more that you wanted to accomplish?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll tell you why. I had the great honor, the privilege of playing in the era of Wellington Mara.
And that's right.
I don't think that there's any more saintly individual other than perhaps the Pope.
Whoa!
I'm serious. I've got to tell you, this guy was unbelievable. He walked the walk. He talked the talk. I was just so inspired by Wellington Mara, the type of man that he was. He was a man of impeccable, I mean, absolutely impeccable respect. And he did things that he never wanted to see the light of day, the amount of people that he helped, and he demanded. He absolutely demanded that his organization have those same reflective attributes that he would prefer to get a lesser player who was a standout in society than to get a great player who was a bum.
Great.
And you got to respect that. You got to admire that.
And no matter what position or what helm they're at.
Absolutely. And he's the one who allowed charity to flourish. I mean, it was almost like it was an unwritten rule. You had to give back to the community. You had to make sure that you walked a certain mile.
Good.
And that's one of the things I feel so gratified and so fortunate to have been exposed to the New York Football Giants and Wellington Mara.
You know, this all happens to us. It'll happen to me one day as well. It happened to you and to many other people. The two teams that are going to be playing on Sunday, the big R, the retire.
Mm-hmm.
When did you, in your mind, maybe about 5 years into it, think you would retire? And when did you come to the decision, wow, I think it's inevitable?
I look at it in two dimensions. Number one, the first thing that you want to do as a professional athlete, you want to become a vested ball player. And back in my day, you had to play 4 years in order to become a vested ball player. And that means that you've accomplished something that's going to pay dividends later on in life. And I always wanted to hit that four-year threshold. And I worked very hard in order to get it. And a lot of us talked about becoming, because it was no secret that a lot of people's career fell short because, you know, the organizations back in that time didn't want people to become vested because that means that their pensions were going to go up.
Absolutely, sure.
And so, on. So a lot of guys find themselves getting a little bit slower and becoming a dinosaur just about at that fourth-year threshold. So that was my first objective, was to make sure that I could play for 4 years. After that, I wanted to become a starter and maintain my position as being a starter and making sure that I had a long and productive and, above all, a safe career, because one of the things that I was concerned about, I'd seen so many of my predecessors into the National Football League, you know, walk around with canes and walkers and wheelchairs and later on in life. And I will tell you a secret, Mark. Harry Carson and I made a pact together. We made a vow that, A, we would never allow ourselves to become overweight, become obese, to have a sedentary lifestyle, and that we would always look as if though we were a proud member of the National Football League well into our retirement. And I've got to say that both he and I have kept that promise, him more so than me, but it's something that we took very, very good pride in.
And you certainly do, and certainly does Harry, and he was one of your certainly best friends then. It sounds like he's still one of your best friends.
He is indeed.
Great guy. Certainly a man of good moral content as well. Always, you guys just seem to really have a good bond and just give a lot of class and panache to the game.
Well, you know, it's even to this day. We can go maybe a week, a year, 2 years and not see one another, and we will pick up immediately.
Yeah, I love that. It's great.
It's a brotherhood. It's a fraternity that I think goes on forever, and we have a great relationship with all of the guys that we played with. And again, I go back, it's a tribute to the organization, which kind of supported that kind of mindset.
But what was it, one day or one game or one half of a season that made you say, okay, this is it, my time's up?
Yes, it was. And it's rather common knowledge that I wanted to retire after my 10th year. That was a nice round number. I hadn't had any serious injuries. I hadn't obviously made it to the Super Bowl, but I wanted to get out before I heard that knock on the door, as it were. And I can remember, Bill Parcells will tell you this, that every year after my 10th year, he had to convince me. He had to come and talk me out of retirement.
Really?
Absolutely. And until he got tired of it, and he just circumvented me entirely, and he would call my wife, Diane. He would call Diane, and she would say,
I love it.
He didn't mind hitting below the belt, I'll tell you that.
That's great.
He called Diane and say, listen, Diane, I know he's got a little bit of more tread on the tire, but I need him for another year.
Well, you know, that says something, certainly a testament to the guy who certainly said that the incredible interception that he called the greatest football play he's ever seen that you did. What game was that?
That was against the Denver Broncos during our Super Bowl year.
That's right. That's right. I mean, obviously, he adored you.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this, and I've got to be honest. Of all the accolades that I've achieved and accomplished as a professional athlete, and there are many of them, the greatest, the absolute greatest, was when Bill Parcells asked me to induct him into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Wow.
When you think, Mark, I mean, he could have elicited any number of A-list
who's who, yeah,
owners, the players, you know, even fellow Hall of Famers. And he asked George Martin. That's an honor that is at the very, very top of my list.
Wow. who could blame you? So now our typical Sundays around a George Martin house, does everything have to come to a standstill, or are you kind of a little bit past that?
I think you would be embarrassed to ask that question, Mark, because there, and I got to be honest, I'm not. There are days when I could not tell you that there's a football game on. I mean, I am not one of those guys who's anchored to the television. You know, I'll be outside cutting the grass, or I'll be, you know, playing with the grandkids, and my wife will say, you know, are you going to watch a game today? And I'll say, what game? Or she will ask me, she says, you know, you didn't get rid of the game tickets that you have this year. And I said, oh, my God, I forgot about
that. That's hysterical. That's
so
hysterical. I love it. George Martin's on the phone with me out from sunny California. And by the way, of course, you and your wife missed a beautiful 10 inches of powder falling here the other day, which I'm sure you did not miss at all. But very quickly, role models. I know you didn't get into football later, but in college and certainly before you turned pro, there are certainly some guys that really caught your eye for some reasons. Who were they?
Well, I got to tell you, people like Jim Brown. And I'll tell you what, not only because of their athletic prowess on the field, but because of their social commitment, because they saw life in a bigger context. You know, I tell people, you know, I don't care how big you are, how fast you are, and if you're an aspiring athlete, you know what, that's all good and well. But tell me what you've done to help society. And people like Jim Brown and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who made it a point to have social issues as a hallmark of their careers, that to me spoke loud and clear to me. And I realized that being a professional athlete is great, but have you done anything to help someone else's life, help them accomplish and achieve what they want to achieve in life? And that's more important to me.
Yeah. You know, a few players come to mind, like Ray Rice, you know, Michael Vick, Plaxico Burress, like guys like that.
Yeah, there are examples for other reasons.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, that's my segue into exorbitant behavior off the field. I mean, this, you talked about, obviously, you're an old school player for many reasons. And, you hear about things like this and how it can continue. It's just kind of mind-boggling how they're still able to play professional sports.
It's very disconcerting. It really is, because, you know, these are people who are very gifted, and they are a very select few. And why do you take that and waste it needlessly when you can touch so many lives so effortlessly? It just seems like and by the way, I'm going to say this is a hard line, but I'm old school. I think it should be required. I think it should be part and parcel.
Absolutely, sure.
Of your responsibility. You made it to the big leagues. You're a big-time NFL ball player. You have an obligation to give back to the community.
Now, you seem like a natural-born leader, but was being a co-captain for the Giants, I think that was, what, the 86 season, 87 season?
That's correct.
Did that kind of further develop your leadership acumen?
No, I think it was always there, Mark, to be honest with you, because, again, I had served in the position as the chapel leader for 12 years at that point in time.
Okay.
I was also the team representative against drug abuse, and I was also the guy who was called the elder statesman, where all the young guys. Most importantly, Mark, I was the guy who started the very first formal degree completion program with the New York Football Giants and Fairleigh Dickinson University.
Wow.
Whereby players could go back during the course of the season and complete their degrees. When I started it, 78% of the guys coming into the National Football League did not have their college degrees. So when you talk about accomplishments, to me, that's my greatest accomplishment on or off the field, is to make sure that continued education was part and parcel of being a professional athlete.
Outstanding, my friend. Outstanding. Love it. Well, the first time we met, I think it was right before you embarked upon a slight little stroll across country. Oh, my Lord, friend. So from September 16, 2007 to June 21st, 2008, that's a couple months right there, you walked across the country because one day you had an epiphany. I mean, I know you always wanted to really rediscover the country in a slower situation versus just getting off a plane, playing in a stadium, getting back on a bus and reboarding a plane again. But after 9/11, you worked not too far around from the Trade Center in a financial a company, I believe, in a finance division. And this is something that was very, very important to you.
It was indeed, Mark. As a matter of fact, I wrote a book about it. It's called Just Around the Bend. And for everyone listening, I would very much encourage them to go to Amazon order a copy of that because it's a tribute. It is an act of reciprocation for some very brave individuals who don't play football, who don't make movies, who don't, you know, drive race cars. These are people who safeguard and protect our freedoms. And you could not have a better example of that other than on September 11, 2001, where so many of those individuals went down there to help, again, to find survivors. And unfortunately, they exposed themselves to all of these toxins down there, and as a result, they themselves became victims. And I thought it was incumbent upon me as a professional athlete to use my bit of celebrity, particularly because it happened in the backyard of New York City,
sure,
where so many people have supported me over the years, to use that bit of celebrity to do two things. Number one, to raise awareness for their plight, and number two, to raise money for their medical care. And as a result of my journey for 911, which saw me walk from the George Washington Bridge 3,000 miles all the way to Embarcadero Park in San Diego, we raised nearly $3 million for the medical care.
That's great.
And we were instrumental in working with local politicians to get the Zadroga bill passed, which I am so very proud of.
I mean, you've been a voice of many regards, and even just the page of the accolades, I was like, wow, well, let me look through these incredible amount of accolades you've received, my friend, on every level, because you've been a spokesperson. You're the guy who wanted the other giant players to get a degree because you said 70-some-odd percent didn't finish college. I mean, when you see something that needs to be done, it seems like you are the trailblazer, and you get it done.
Well, you know, and even with that, Mark, I feel that I haven't done enough. I mean, I look at the kids. And by the way, you probably remember the incident with the Central Park jogger where African-American youth who were accused of brutally raping a jogger. Well, we started a charity based upon that because we felt as former professional athletes, and particularly African-American athletes, we should be better role models in the inner cities and to the kids at youth. So we started a charity called Minority Athletes Networking, and it is 27 years old. And we still have a mentoring program, a scholarship program, which we're very proud of, and we make sure that we go in and give them a positive message, but in addition to that, give them the wherewithal to make sure that they can establish a formula like we did to get themselves out of that situation.
Fantastic. And then once they get them out of that situation, you also mentor them and guide them as the program, the Young African-American Professionals.
Absolutely. And this is where I'm glad to invoke my colleague's name yet again, Harry Carson, Joe Morris, Zeke Moat. The list goes on and on and on. Carl Nelson, who's just a great advocate for us as well. I mean, it's just a part of that fraternity that says that we can continue to do more, even though we're now former professional athletes.
You're right. It's so incumbent. And it doesn't matter what you do in life. If you work in radio, if you're a journalism major or a professional, I mean, you have to give back in some capacity. I think it's just all right. I mean, Habitat for Humanity's building some homes in my town, and I heard there was a concert there happening 2 weeks ago, so I called them up. How can I be involved? Can I MC the concert? I got involved. And that's what you have to do. I mean, you donate your time because if you can bring something to the table that's going to benefit someone, some family, put a roof and allow them to have dreams for a lifetime, it's worth it.
Kudos to you, Mark, and that's paying it forward, and hopefully someone whose life you touch will touch other lives in the future.
Absolutely. So if people want to learn more about your journey, it really is an amazing journey. Even just a video highlight on your website, georgedmartin.com. That's georgedmartin.com. It is a great little synopsis. Also, you can visit, learn more at ajourney4911.org. ajourney4911.org. And 27 pairs of sneakers later, 8.5 months, you did it, my friend. So what was your mindset? What did you think about very quickly, pre and post the walk? You know, obviously, you were doing this for a very great cause for the people who are the salt of the earth. Did you have any deeper feelings and or reactions post walk?
Absolutely, Mark. I got to tell you this, and I've got to be completely honest. I've always had the wanderlust. I wanted to see what America was like up close and personally because I didn't get the opportunity as a professional athlete because you fly in, you play, you fly
yeah.
out. But this gave me the opportunity to meet America and Americans one step at a time, and that's why I was compelled to write the book, because it's about those heroes, not just the ones there in New York City that some of us may be familiar with, but the ones that are out in the highways and the byways. And the book is filled with those individuals who had a profound impact on my life. In retrospect, it was a reaffirmation that this great America that we live in, Mark, I'm telling you, every day for 9 months, I was in a euphoric state to see the patriotism, the support, the wonderful, wonderful allegiance for A Journey for 9-1-1. And it's all spelled out in the book. And if you're a Giant fan, if you're a patriot, if you are a first responder, you've got to read this book to hear about some of the wonderful experiences that I had walking across the United States.
Combined with a lot of roadkill.
Yes, combined with a lot of roadkill and a few coins that I picked up along the way.
Yeah, a couple $100. You know, I'm watching this video. I'm like, why is he telling this guy to bend over and pick this up? What could be so important? The camera's on him. Then the second time, I'm like, oh, spare change. I get it.
Yeah. $200 later, my wife is looking for the sequel to this so I can go back and pick up some.
Yeah, no kidding. You know what? If I was on your crew, I would have went ahead and dropped some silver dollars to give you a little bit more incentive here and there.
Exactly.
Hey, quickly, you know, there's so many things that you've done so well in your life. And there's one thing, and I'm sure this came across your table through your agent or through maybe Bill Parcells called your wife and asked her this, but it would have made perfect sense to me from an outsider that George Martin would have become a commentator.
You know what? I got to tell you, Mark. Been there, done that, got the T-shirt.
Okay.
I tried it when I first retired from pro sports. But you know what, Mark? It was more of the same. And like I say, I wanted to see a different perspective of life. I had enough of sports. I've seen it, done it from every imaginable angle. I wanted to see life from a different prism, and I'm so delighted that I did.
So am I, even though I would have liked to have seen you with some greats alongside broadcasting, but I'm glad that you followed your dreams, my friend, and are still following your dreams. And besides being one hell of a babysitter for your children, as a fun grandfather, I'm sure, but you're making some great strides, and we greatly appreciate this. And I know you you speak across the country to organizations, and all that information's on your website, and, of course, the 9/11 website, which, again, is what, George?
The 9/11 website is ajourneyfor911.org, or they can go to my website, which is George D, as in David, GeorgeDMartin.com.
And finally, who do you think is going to win, and who would you like to win on Sunday?
Well, I've got to say it's going to be a great game. I'm very excited. I will be there, and I will be rooting very passionately for my old defensive coordinator, Mr. Bill Belichick.
Okay. That's a gentleman's way out. Good for you. Always a gentleman, and I'm sorry we couldn't be in studio, but next time you're in the city, we'll have to get together. And really, thank you for being a major contributor to America's great game and just a terrific person. George Martin, I greatly appreciate your time, and have a great day, my friend.
Well, thanks, Mark. I'm going to go lace up my sneakers, and I'm going to go for a walk outside.
Yeah. Don't rub it in. Don't forget your SPF, my friend.
You got it, buddy.
Okay, appreciate it. Have
thanks,
a good day
Mark.
Now.
Okay, bye-bye.
This is Insight with Mark Farrell, PRN. We'll be right back after this. It was great to have George Martin on the show. Former New York Giant, 1975 to 1988. What a great line. Harry Carson, among any other greats. Really good guy. Done so much on the field and off the field. Really happy to have him on the show. Even though he did move out west. His wife put up a hell of a lot for many years for his success, right? So I was thinking about, people are into the football game. People are not into the football big game because of deflategate, I should say. Maybe it'll be inflate by the time it's over. Deflategate because of the balls. So you know what? I decided that, in honor of people who may be boycotting, if you're thinking about boycotting the game, maybe some more reasons to help you be swayed. Okay, here's number one. Pig Union is boycotting game since they were cheated out of air. Okay, you are so over Tom Brady. You don't advocate cheating and breaking rules. Another one. Because fans in the tri-state area bleed blue or green. Giants and Jets, of course, they are far from being in the Super Bowl. George Martin, my guest today, and former New York Giant player, great, is not playing. Because you can't support the NFL's position not to sanction New England prior to the Super Bowl. which I'm sure a lot of people are saying that's why they are boycotting the game, because of that stance. You can't stand seeing Belichick's scowl for 3 hours. Well, I understand that. You've seen all the commercials already. Yeah, well, they're all online. Yeah, pretty much about 10 or 15 of them. Jason, our program director here, said he's seen about 10 or 15 of them. Kitten and Puppy Bowl doesn't advocate or use dead animals for their ball. So if you needed any reason not to watch the Super Bowl, maybe one of those very lame reasons would satisfy your reason. I don't know. You know, it's looking like it's going to be a good game. I actually caught one of the NFL games shows. It used to be Inside the NFL on HBO. Now it's on Showtime. I'm not sure of the name of it now. But I was watching it last night, and they were dissecting everything. And just so much to football that I don't know. I know the general premise and, you know, the general rules, certainly. I can follow it no problem, et cetera. But when you get into the nuances and positions, what they're capable of doing, not capable of doing, opponents, et cetera, then it gets, you know, a little bit more complicated and layered. But when I realized that Seahawks have to really run the ball big time against New England, because they don't have the capability to throw it against their defense, because it's going to be so tightly manned that they wouldn't have a chance if they do that. Only way they can do it is if they run it on the ground. So talking about adversity, which we usually do on a show, typical conversation point, and certainly with George Martin's insight on adverse conditions, there's going to be a lot of adversity for either team. Trying to overcome their weaknesses and trying to discover the weakness in their opponents. Certainly that's what we kind of all do in life in one regard or another, whether we're at work, in a relationship, trying to figure out what's going to work together or alone and make things the outcome all the best. So I hope you enjoyed our little conversation today with George Martin, a giant great. About his long tenure with the New York Giants. Great stuff, great man. And certainly about maybe possibly what's a Super Bowl in your life. And maybe it'll prompt some conversation with your spouse, significant other, boyfriend, girlfriend, colleague, about maybe what you want in life. That could be a little bit more profound, have a great impact on what you do, what you live for, or maybe something that you want to add to the bucket list. Show's been Insight, always here on Thursdays from 11 to noon. My name is Mark Farrow, always reachable at mark@markfarrowmotivation.com, mark@markfarrowmotivation.com. And of course, the website is markfarrowmotivation.com. Time for my afternoon lunch. That's a typical time to have lunch, isn't it? Have a great day. Enjoy the game.